The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Appreciate some of the comments that have come in these last few days in response to programs this week. If we have time, hopefully we can get through a few more emails. I know I did that yesterday, but some more that have come in the last 24 hours. A few in response to yesterday's show, where we went through quite a lot of the history of the lawsuit fighting over Mystery of the Ages and the other writings by Herbert W. Armstrong, passing that 15-year anniversary just this week. So that was yesterday's show, by the way. You can get to that podcast at thetrumpet.com. And what I hope to do with today's show is, well, I think you'll see it kind of ties together a number of themes that we've discussed this past week. I want to start with a Spectator piece on relativistic America. It says here, this is in response to the violence that we see escalating, and then the calls for more legislation, more laws, more gun laws to solve this problem. And it says here, the Florida mass shooting, which even a minimally competent state could have prevented, is a window on a relativistic America that is neither safe nor free. I mean, it really does allow for us to look into America, all that's happened in recent weeks. It says, for decades, gun control liberals who corrupted civil society and called it progress have proposed more government and less morality. All right, these same liberals, they want less morality. They want to see the family breakdown. They want to see absolute freedom the way they view it. Of course, it's the worst kind of slavery there is. But they've rebelled against laws. They've been the proponents of lawlessness. And now they're calling upon bigger government and more laws of all things to supposedly solve the problem. It says, but all that produces is an out-of-control society in which responsibility lessens everywhere. It's given us broken homes, broken schools, and broken government. That's what less morality has produced. And that's what our founding fathers warned. They say, you take away religion and morality, you're going to have broken homes, you're going to have broken schools, you're going to have a broken government, you're going to have a broken nation. It won't work. It says, all of the hasty gun control proposals under discussion amount to rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic. I mean, the whole ship's going down. What good is it going to do to rearrange a few deck chairs? If a country's culture is sick, it doesn't matter what legislation passes. The people won't follow the law, and a corrupt and incompetent government won't enforce it. That's really what was on display in Florida recently. It really does give us a window. It gives us a window, doesn't it? Into relativistic America. This is what we wanted. This is what the educational system was calling for. No absolute values. No right or wrong. No definition of evil to speak of. Everything's relative. It says, a discussion that is presented as a trade-off between security and liberty isn't. It is just one more step toward a future without either. The least emotionally satisfying fix, quote-unquote, to the problem of gun violence, because it sounds so abstract and musty, and because it would require uprooting the moral relativism of the last 50 years or so, is the only real one, restoring civil society. That's the only real solution. Restoring civil society. He says here, as it disintegrated, America went from fewer laws and less violence to more laws and more violence. America has more laws today than ever. And yet, look at the violence. It's increasing. It says relativism and totalitarianism, which combine to form much of the thrust of modern politics, reinforce each other. Decades of moral relativism have sapped civil society, causing a spike in terror and disorder. Aspiring totalitarians then point to those horrors and call for bigger and bigger government. You see, it's just corruption through and through. It gives rise to these totalitarians that want more power, just like you heard that sheriff a couple weeks ago saying that, look, we need to give law enforcement more power. Never mind that we showed up at this killer's house 39 times. We need more power. They had all the power they needed to do something if they just would have acted. It says, in that vision, well, let me just back up. Gun control liberalism rests on that reinforcing paradox, the permissive society giving birth to the Leviathan. In that vision lies the realization of the founding fathers' worst fears. They didn't want less morality and more government. They wanted more morality and less government. The Ten Commandments, not 10 new gun laws. They wanted the Ten Commandments. They wanted civil society to thrive and big government to wither. It's there in the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights. You read the Declaration of Independence, just as Calvin Coolidge said back in the 1920s, that's a spiritual document, four references to God. Here, all of these so-called rich white men, that's just all the way they're seen today, the ones that signed the document. Some of them slave owners, so we just have to say they were all flawed and the document itself was wrong. Everything that was built up on that, we need to tear it down. Well, these men, they sacrificed, as it says at the end of that document, they sacrificed all, so many of them. That's why George Washington inspired so many people to follow after him and to fight for the nation. And to give up their lives if need be. They saw in their commander-in-chief someone who was willing to make sacrifices. He made sacrifices for the nation. Well, it says here, going back to what these founders wanted, they wanted civil society to thrive and big government to wither. They wanted laws, but not such a thicket of them, that adults were reduced to children and the civilized to criminals. They understood, the founders understood, that freedom is inseparable from the good of man, and thus any law that truly serves it must take legitimate freedoms into account. That's from the American Spectator. Saying that, look, all this discussion about adding this gun law or this kind of gun control, all it amounts to is rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic. We want more government, but less morality. Relativistic America, what has it given us? Broken homes, broken schools, broken government. A broken nation, an upside-down nation. Mr. Armstrong, Herbert Armstrong was right. The stability of the nation resides in its families, in the home. That's the foundation. If that breaks down, everything breaks down. The American Spectator had another piece, just a shorter blurb, from a while back on what 26 out of the 27 mass shooters share in common. What do you suppose it is? 26 out of 27. It says the Old Testament tells us not to blame the sins of the Father on the Son. It stays silent on blaming the sins of the Son on the Father. A post by Mark Meckler at Pathos notes that 26 of the 27 deadliest mass shooters in American history share something in common. NRA membership, multiple prescriptions, a history of institutionalization. No, all but one was raised from childhood by someone other than his biological father. Fatherlessness is a serious problem, Meckler points out. America's boys have been under stress for decades. It's not toxic masculinity hurting them. It's the fact that when they come home, there are no fathers there. There are no fathers. He says parents, like policemen and priests, act as effective social programs. I mean, that's the first line of defense in society. The father who rules the family well, like the Bible says. But in too many of our households, the father's gone missing. And then now, as you saw in Florida, you see a breakdown in other levels of authority and in confronting rebellious teenaged boys in many cases. Teenage boys who have not been confronted by a loving father or even by local law enforcement officials, just left to roam, just left to play violent video games for sometimes 10, maybe 15 hours per day. 15 hours a day. Mass shooting simulators. Every day. And then we wonder why he's hearing voices. Go and shoot up that school. Go and shoot up that school. Look at what he's putting into his mind. No restrictions. No absolutes at home. Just do whatever you want. Simulate mass shootings on the computer screen. Go for it. Go for it. No father there. No father to hold up any kind of standard. Fox News, this was following the shooting from a couple weeks ago. This is about the desperate cry of America's boys by Susan Vinker. She says here, broken homes or homes without a physically and emotionally present mother and father are the cause of most society's ills. That's the cause. Dysfunctional families produce dysfunctional children. That's the reality. And then, well, she talks about some of the same things that Spectator piece did. How that you have this one common ingredient on all these mass shooters. The shooters are boys or they're young men. And so, oh, well, all that you would hear in the mainstream, it must be that toxic masculinity. We've got to bring the male down another notch. In fact, there's not enough masculinity in the homes of those shooters. There's not enough righteous masculinity, godly masculinity, godly authority. It says, life for Nicholas Cruz was no different. His adoptive father died when Cruz was very young, and his adoptive mother had a very difficult time raising him. America's boys are in serious trouble. As Warren Farrell's new book, The Boy Crisis, explains, boys are experiencing a crisis of education, a crisis of mental health, a crisis of purpose. And at the root of it all is fatherlessness. Do you know that Herbert Armstrong wrote about all of this in Missing Dimension and Sex? The last version printed in 1981. 1981. Why, those seem like the halcyon days of old. The 80s. Herbert Armstrong was writing about all of this, all that we're seeing today. Indeed, there's a direct correlation between boys who grow up with absent fathers and boys who drop out of school, who drink, who do drugs, who become delinquent, and who wind up in prison. I mean, the chances of those things happening with a boy, they skyrocket in situations where the father's gone or absent. And as we can see from the 27 shooters, the chances of them killing their classmates also skyrockets. We blame guns, violence in the media, violence in video games, and poor family values. Each is a plausible player, Farrell noted in 2013 after the Newtown, Connecticut shooting. But our daughters live in the same homes with the same access to the same guns, video games, and media, and are raised with the same family values. Our daughters are not killing, our sons are. Farrell's explanation, it says, this is the Fox reporter, his explanation about how masculinity can be a force for good or for evil is enormously instructive. Without dads as role models, boys' testosterone is not well channeled. The boy experiences a sense of purposelessness, a lack of boundary enforcement, rudderlessness, and often withdraws into video games and video porn. At worst, when boys' testosterone is not well channeled by an involved dad, boys become among the world's most destructive forces. She says when boys' testosterone is well channeled by an involved dad, boys become among the world's most constructive forces. She says here finally, the solution to male violence is not to spout off drivel about the evils of masculinity. Masculinity, channeled well, is the reason assistant football coach Aaron Fice died during that shooting. Fice shielded students from bullets by pushing them inside a classroom. There are some few examples left of true masculinity, not nearly enough, but you do see it from time to time. Now, you look at what happened at the Academy Awards on Sunday. I talked about just some of the horrible content coming out of Hollywood on Wednesday's episode or Wednesday's program. But the dialogue, the jokes, the monologue, all of the political statements, two themes basically emerged from the evening. We've got to attack men. We've got to attack toxic masculinity. All men are predators. All men are violent. And then, of course, gun control. That's really what Hollywood wants to fix. Laura Hollis had a piece earlier this week about the kind of manhood that Hollywood is promoting. She writes about the strange take that Hollywood has on masculinity. What kinds of men does Hollywood fawn over? Men who sleep with other men. She refers to that one video or movie that got the award with the young man who seduced the teenage boy. Pedophilia. She says, and then there are the men who dress like women, not to mention the men who cut off their genitals and declare themselves to be women. And until recently anyway, heterosexual men who are predators. Are you detecting a pattern here, she says? And then, of course, there's all the calls for gun control there at that studio or at that wherever they had the award ceremony. An award ceremony event, by the way, that was surrounded by men with guns. And so here are all the celebrities inside, safely inside, protected by the guns and the metal detectors outside. They're safe inside this big arena, going on national TV, calling for more gun control. Laura Hollis said in her piece, amid the calls for the country to do something for the safety of our children, she says Cecile Richards, outgoing president of Planned Parenthood, was honored during the ceremony for her activism. Does no one see the irony here? Planned Parenthood has performed over 300,000 abortions annually during Richard's 13-year tenure as president. That's more than 3.9 million abortions. Gloria Felt held the position between 96 and 2006. Faye Waddleton was president between 1978 and 1992. Since 1973, when abortion was legalized by the U.S. Supreme Court, Planned Parenthood is estimated to have performed somewhere between 7.5 and 8 million abortions. For all but five of those years, the president of Planned Parenthood was female. Laura Hollis concludes here saying, those calling for gun control seem to overlook that every gun sale does not kill a human being, but every abortion does. So while Hollywood rails against men and guns and killing children, who has presided over the destruction of more children than anyone else in this country? Women. Women, she says. And so the family is broken. The family is upside down. This is right out of Isaiah 3, where it says, the children oppress, the women rule over them, and of course the men are not even mentioned. In fact, at the early part of that chapter, Isaiah 3, it says, God takes them away. He takes away the strong masculine leaders. Where are the men to step up to the atrocities committed by Planned Parenthood? It's women presiding over these organizations. We just, incidentally, we watched In the Womb this week in our Principles of Living class. An outstanding video that just tracks the rapid growth and development of that tiny little seed, that ovum, after it's fertilized by the male sperm, and how that within weeks you begin to see the development of the two vital organs, the head and the heart. How that anyone could look at any part of that process, week one or week 40, and say that by aborting that, you're not aborting or killing a human life, is beyond me. I mean, this is why Planned Parenthood don't want potential customers to look at ultrasounds and such. They don't want these parents to see the life in there. They just want you to think it's just a blob, just a collection of cells, and that's it. No real life. But where are the men? Where are the fathers? Where are the husbands? As Tucker Carlson said the other night on Fox, something ominous is happening to the men in America. It is ominous. In fact, it's prophesied. I think he had a segment that was about 7 minutes, and it's outstanding, and it's just something you don't hear today, particularly coming from a man. There have been a few books. Christina Hoff Sommers comes to mind. She's written about the war against boys. But congratulations to Tucker Carlson as a man for getting on his national television show on Wednesday night and sounding the alarm. What is happening to the men of America? Here's clip one.
The signs are everywhere. If you're a middle-aged man, you probably know a peer who has killed himself in recent years, at least one. If you're a parent, you may have noticed that your daughter's friends seem a little more on the ball than your son's. They get better grades, they smoke much less marijuana, they spend less time playing video games, they go to more prestigious colleges. If you're an employer, you may have noticed that your female employees show up on time. The young men often don't. And of course, if you live in this country, you've just seen a horrifying series of mass shootings, far more than we've ever had. Women didn't do that. In every case, the shooter was a man. Something ominous is happening to men in America. Everyone who pays attention knows that. What's odd is how rarely you hear it publicly acknowledged.
The signs are everywhere. Anyone who's paying attention sees it or knows it. But how many, though? How many are paying attention? I mean, you still have people calling for more opportunities for women. As recently as the Academy Awards Sunday night. Look at how few people are willing to publicly acknowledge this and face it. Carlson went on to say this. Here's clip two.
Our leaders pledge to create more opportunities for women and girls, whom they imply are failing. Men don't need help. They're the patriarchy. They're fine, more than fine. But are they fine? Here are the numbers. Start with the most basic, life and death. The average American man will die 5 years before the average American woman. One of the reasons for this is addiction. Men are more than twice as likely as women to become alcoholics. They're also twice as likely to die of a drug OD. In New Hampshire, one of the states hardest hit by the opioid crisis, 73% of overdose deaths were men. But the saddest reason for shortened lifespans is suicide. 77% of all suicides in America are committed by men. The overall rate is increasing at a dramatic pace. Between 1997 and 2014, there was a 43% rise in suicide deaths among middle-aged American men.
These are the facts, as he brings out there. Addiction. They're dying earlier. They commit suicide at a much greater rate. 77% of suicide victims. They're men. They're men. And then he goes on and talks about the people in prison. Most of them are men. Here's clip three.
You often hear America's incarceration crisis. Well, that's almost exclusively a male problem, too. Over 90% of inmates are men. Now, these problems are complex, but we know that they start young. And relative to girls, boys are failing in school. More girls than boys graduate high school, considerably more go to and graduate from college. In schools at every level, boys account for the overwhelming majority of discipline cases. One study found that fully 1 in 5 high school boys had been diagnosed with some form of hyperactivity disorder. That's compared with just 1 in 11 girls. Many of them were medicated for it.
That's Tucker Carlson on Fox the other night, talking about, well, things that you've maybe read before at thetrumpet.com. It occurred to me this morning, I mentioned Christina Hoff Sommers. I forget when she wrote her book, but I can recall writing about the war against boys, or, as you know from my father, the conspiracy against fatherhood. Some of these writings are 15 and 20 years old. I mean, basically, we've had another generation. We've had two or three generations since Mr. Armstrong was warning about it. How much worse is it going to get? And yet still you have people, even in government, ignoring this crisis. Or still you have them implying that, well, it's girls. It's the women who are struggling. It's the women who are failing. It's the women that need help. It's the women who are being abused. Of course, there's some extreme cases of abuse, sexual abuse and otherwise. But look at the big picture here. What are the facts? Are our men and boys, are they really doing well? Are they prospering? Here's another snippet from that show the other night, clip four.
Women now decisively outnumber men in graduate school. They earn the majority of doctoral degrees. They're now the majority of new enrollees in both law and medical schools. For men, the consequences of failing in school are long-term and profound. Between 1979 and 2010, working-age men with only high school degrees saw their real hourly wages drop about 20%. Over the same period, high school-educated women saw their wages rise. The decline of the industrial economy disproportionately hurt men. There are now 7 million working-age men in America who don't work. They've dropped out of the labor force. Nearly half of them take pain medication on any given day. That is the highest rate in the world by far. Far fewer young men get married than did just a few decades ago, and fewer stay married. About 1 in 5 American children live now only with their mothers. That's double the rate of 1970. Millions more boys growing up without fathers. Young adult men are now more likely to live with a parent than they are to live with a spouse or a partner. That is not the case for young women. Single women buy their own homes at more than twice the rate of single men. More women than men now have driver's licenses.
It's pretty amazing. Just right down the list. Yesterday was International Women's Day. And you had, right down the road from us in Birmingham, you had Prince Harry and Meghan Markle. They visited a school, a high school, I guess. And according to the Telegraph, they encouraged schoolgirls to break down gender stereotypes by pursuing careers in science and math and engineering. You've got to break down more barriers, girls. You're lagging behind. Don't let the boys lead. Don't let the men take the lead. Certainly not in math, science, or engineering. But what is the truth? What is actually happening? Why is this not publicly acknowledged? It's the same problem here in the UK as in the United States. It's a dearth of leadership. Isaiah 3 verses 1 and 2. It's the same problem in both of our nations. And yet here are the celebrities that everyone looks to. Prince Harry, along with his fiancé, they were giving out prizes to winners of a speechwriting competition. And the subject of the speech, the most inspiring women. Who are the women that we can be most inspired by? Who can we emulate? Well, there are a lot of remarkable women in history. There's a lot of remarkable women in the Bible. But where are the men? Why are the men constantly put down? Why do the men constantly go missing? Why are so many boys committing these atrocities? And why have 26 of 27 mass shooters grown up without fathers, without their biological dads? Is that a good thing? Well, we're meant to believe that it makes no difference, that a mom can do just fine on her own, that the boys, they'll be able to navigate their way through it, no problem. I mean, he should have the freedom to do whatever he wants, that father. Another piece here says only half of U.S. children are being raised by their married parents. It affects all children. And the boys, they lean toward a more violent lifestyle. And the girls, of course, lean more toward premarital sex. If there's no father present, that's just the truth. It says, with lower marriage rates in the U.S., declining rates of children living with married parents are not a surprising find for researchers. I mean, we're not surprised by this. We're not even getting married anymore. Okay, so of course children are going to be living. They're not going to be living with married parents. It says the report also highlighted the abundant evidence that children fare better when both of their biological married parents raise them throughout childhood. This is common sense. There's abundant evidence. That's in quotation marks. It says, as shown in numerous analytical studies, students with stably married parents are more likely to do well in school and less likely to cut classes, repeat grades, be suspended or expelled, or drop out. 26 of 27 shooters coming out of fatherless homes, or at least homes with no biological father present. The same article says, rich or poor, this is a type of advantage which parents from all social classes can bestow upon their children. The privilege of growing up in a stable, married two-parent family. It says the authors advise that American society would do well to place more efforts in promoting the marital privilege of parents for children in the country, saying the success and future of children will depend on it. Why aren't there more calls for this after a mass shooting of another fatherless boy killing his classmates? It says, because the type of family in which children are raised matters a great deal to their well-being and future success, we should seek ways to enable less educated and less affluent parents to raise their children together in a stable family. Yes, well, we should. There's no doubt about that, but are we? How about less government and more morality? How about that? How about getting back to what the founders wanted for the United States? How about fewer laws, maybe 10 to be precise, and more morality and obedience to those laws? These are the facts. Here's this national crisis. It's like the big elephant in our room. And yet, like Tucker Carlson says, I mean, people just ignore it. Here's a bit more from his show on Wednesday, clip 5.
Whenever gender differences come up in public debate, the so-called wage gap seems to dominate the conversation. You've heard it. A woman makes 77 cents for every dollar a man earns. That's a statistic that you'll hear a lot. Presidents have repeated it, many candidates. It's everywhere. And yet that number compares all American men to all American women across all professions. No legitimate social scientist would consider that a valid or meaningful measure. The number doesn't mean anything. It's intentionally misleading. It's a talking point. Once you compare men and women with similar experience, working the same hours and similar jobs for the same period of time, that's the only way you can measure it, the gap all but disappears. In fact, it may invert. One study using census data found that single women in their 20s living in metropolitan areas now earn 8% more on average than their male counterparts. By the way, the majority of managers in the workplace are now women. Women, on average, are scoring higher on IQ tests than men are.
These are the facts. And yet you have presidents, as he said there. Not just feminists. Not just, you know, spokespeople for the Me Too movement. You have presidents that are throwing this misleading statistic out there. 77%, 77 cents on the dollar. But what is actually happening? If you measure it fairly, the gap disappears or it even inverts. It's the men who are behind. It's the boys who are behind. It's the young men who are behind, the young women. That's the truth. It's a national crisis. I mean, something ominous is happening to men in America. How can this be good for the health of the country? How can this be good for America's future? This is a country of 320 or 30 million people. We've never seen anything happen to a nation of this size, like nothing like this. Here again, Tucker Carlson from Wednesday, clip 6.
Even physically, men are falling behind. A recent study found that almost half of young men failed the Army's entry-level physical fitness exam during basic training. Fully 70% of American men are now overweight or obese. That's compared to 59% of American women. Perhaps most bafflingly and terrifyingly, men seem to be becoming less male fundamentally, measurably. Sperm counts, for example, across the West have plummeted. They're down almost 60% since the early 1970s. Scientists don't know why this is. Testosterone levels in men have also fallen precipitously. One study found that average levels of male testosterone dropped by 1% every year after 1987, and it's not related to age. In other words, the average 40-year-old man in 2017 would have testosterone levels 30% lower than the average 40-year-old man in 1987. There is no upside to this trend. Lower testosterone levels in men are associated with depression, lethargy, weight gain, decreased cognitive ability. Nothing like this has ever happened to a population this big. So you'd think we'd want to know exactly why. What's going on? How do we fix it? And yet the media ignore that story. It's considered a fringe topic somehow. Nor is it, believe it or not, a priority in the scientific research establishment. We checked, and we couldn't find a single NIH-funded study on why testosterone levels are falling.
Media ignore it? Even the scientific research establishment ignores it. No one cares about it. But like he says there, there's no upside to this. And you might hear, you know, stories that are related to this, maybe. But where is there an outlet facing it head on? CNS just had a report today, I believe it was, or yesterday. Less than 30% of young men are qualified enough to join the military. That's 3 in 10 now. Less than 1 in 3. They're not qualified to join the military either because of physical, mental, or moral issues. This is a crisis. And it's spreading right into America's military. This military that our president says he's going to really rebuild. It's going to be stronger than ever. Is it? Is it going to be stronger than ever? Is America stronger than ever? Well, in just about every respect, it's getting weaker by the day. One final clip here from Tucker Carlson. This is clip 7.
So those are the numbers, and they paint a very clear picture. American men are failing in body, in mind, and in spirit. This is a crisis. Yet our leaders pretend it's not happening. And in fact, they tell us the opposite is true. Women are victims. Men are oppressors. To question that assumption is to risk punishment. Even as women far outpace men in higher education, for example, virtually every college campus supports a women's studies department whose core goal is to attack male power. Our politicians and business leaders internalize and amplify that message. Men are privileged, women are oppressed. Hire and promote and reward accordingly. Now, that would be fine if it were true, but it's not true. At best, it's an outdated view of an America that no longer exists. At worst, it's a pernicious lie. Either way, ignoring the decline of men does not help anyone. Men and women need each other. One cannot exist without the other. That is elemental biology. It's also the reality that each one of us has lived with our parents and siblings and friends. When men fail, all of us suffer.
So good for Tucker Carlson for exposing this pernicious lie. Shame on the media. Shame on politicians. Shame on educators. Shame on the scientific research establishment for pretending that this is not happening. American men are failing in body, in mind, in spirit. This is a crisis. It is a crisis, and pretending it's not will not make it go away. It is, as I said, referring to Isaiah 3, it's prophesied. It's just one more sign of the times. The evil that waxes worse and worse, 2 Timothy 3. Well, speaking of Timothy, you can go back to the first book of Timothy, 1 Timothy 3, to read about how that it should be. Leaders in the church, Paul said to Timothy, this is what you want to look for. You want to look for a leader who, a man who rules his own house. A man who has his children, including his boys. A man who has his boys in subjection with all gravity. That's the big goal for a Christian father. That is the big goal for any father. To rule the family well. To bring those children into subjection. But we've rejected that. And we've replaced it with what? a relativistic America, and we think it's progress to do away with absolutes. We think it's progress to do away with godly discipline. We think it's progress to diminish the role of the father, to talk about how that men are privileged and women are oppressed. There's still a long way to go in this war to finally put men in their proper place. That's the thinking as they continue on, attacking any and every form of male power. Paul said to Timothy, "For if a man knows not how to rule his own house, how is he going to take care of the church of God?" If he can't rule his home, if he can't rule his boys, his children, his daughters, his wife, yes, his wife. If he can't rule the family well, like Christ leads and rules the church, like Christ leads and rules and loves the church, then how's he going to step up and be a leader in the church? Children need a father. Boys need a God-fearing father, a father who lovingly keeps them in check. One of the very commandments of God, one of the 10. How about if we simplify it? Just 10. Let's go with 10 and then really practice obedience. And let's enforce those laws. Honoring your father and your mother, that you might live long, that you might be blessed. Yesterday I talked about, well, some exciting history on the one hand, winning the lawsuit, winning the rights to Mystery of the Ages and other writings of Herbert Armstrong. But it's also some tragic history, too. I mean, so many of those men, those ministers, those leaders in that church, the Worldwide Church of God, spending the better part of their adult life in that church, supporting Herbert Armstrong, supporting the father. He was a father type in so many ways. They came into the church through the teachings that God gave to Mr. Armstrong. Like Paul said to the brethren at Corinth, I mean, you may have 10,000 instructors in Christ, but you don't have many fathers. He says, I begot you. I've begotten you through the gospel. You have the one father type. And you know what he said after that? Verse 16 of 1 Corinthians 4, he said, "Wherefore I beseech you, you be a follower of me. I've been a father figure to you. And if you follow me, if you follow my steps, it leads right to God the Father." God in Malachi 1 says about those Laodicean ministers, "Where's my honor? How come you don't honor me as the Father? How come you want to kick me out? How come you want to put me down? How come you want to attack my authority?" They aren't honoring the Father. I mentioned that sermon. Well, I played clips from my father's message. The day after we won the court case, the day after we won the rights to print and distribute all of that material, that literature. And where did my father go in that message? The first passage he turned to, 2 Kings 2. We don't have time to go through it again. I went through a bit of it yesterday, but here is Elisha looking to his father. Elijah's about to be taken away in a whirlwind, and he's got to make these stops to these different campuses, schools, colleges, the schools of the prophets. He says, "I've got to go to Jericho. You stay here, tarry here while I go off to Jericho." And in every case, Elisha said, "No way, I'm going with you. I'm following you. I'm staying with you." Elijah, remember, he took off his mantle, he smote the water and the river Jordan, and split in two, miraculously. A parting of the Red Sea miracle. Well, then he's taken away in a whirlwind, and Elisha says, "My father, the chariot of Israel." And then he grabbed up the mantle of Elijah. And he smote the waters. And they divided as well. Elisha asked, where is the God of Elijah? He grabbed hold of the mantle of Elijah. It's really a pretty simple formula, like my father brought out in that first sermon right after the court case victory. If you look to the mantle of Elijah, the prophet, the father figure, my father, then you can avoid all of the deception and the confusion and the violence and the hatred and the vanity. This is, after all, Satan's world. He's a master broadcaster. He's the prince of the power of the air. He's been cast down to this earth. He's confined to this earth. My father, in one of his booklets, he says that at the point of Satan being cast down there in 1986, God did it because he just wouldn't tolerate Satan's wrath any longer. And so he cast him down to this earth. And then, as it says in Revelation 12, he said to the inhabitants of the earth, woe unto you, because the devil has come down to you, and he has great wrath, and he knows that his time is short. And so he's wreaking havoc all over this earth. He's turning the family upside down. He's erasing the father right out of the home. Right out of the nation, right out of the church, right out of the society. And it's never enough for him. He's got to keep advancing. He's got to keep attacking male power. Men are privileged and women are oppressed. Boys have the toxic masculinity and the girls are suppressed. The girls need more opportunity. The girls have to break the stereotypes. They've got to get more involved in science, in engineering. That's the devil's message. That's what the devil wants for us to believe. But the facts paint a very different picture. The facts show us that men are in trouble. And so are their sons. And the solution, the only solution, can be found in the pages of your Bible. I've given you a bit of it here. But look to Jesus Christ. What did Jesus himself, what did he do when he walked this earth? When he came to this earth, the only begotten Son of the Father, He came to declare the Father. That's John 1 in verse 18. He wanted to declare. He wanted to promote. He wanted to point to his Father. He was right in the bosom of his Father. And like my dad writes in the God Family Vision, that's where God wants us. He wants you. He wants me right in his bosom. He wants that kind of special, close father-son relationship. That's what God's master plan is all about. God yearns to have an intimate relationship with you as his son, with us as his children. He's reaching out to his sons. He's not absent. It's like my father said in that sermon after the court case victory. Look, God was holding up the mantle of Elijah in front of those Laodicean ministers, those wayward ministers who turned and walked away from their father, the father type, and God the Father. And God says to all those Laodiceans, members and ministers alike, look, this is where the mantle of Elijah is located. This is where the God of Elijah continues his work. This is where all of the materials, the literature, the revelation and mystery of the ages and incredible human potential, this is where it's at. It's right here in the Philadelphia Church of God, the one church, the only church willing to fight for the truth, willing to stand up and honor the Father, willing to go after the mantle of Elijah, willing to declare God the Father. It's all about the Father. That's what the God family vision is all about. The Father, the head of this wonderful, majestic, royal family. And as my father brings out in the God Family Vision book, our number one passion must be to declare the Father and his family. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program this weekend, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today. Thanks for joining us this week. And we'll see you next week.